Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Hey. Busy week at Scuffed Global Headquarters on the personal front because guess what? Greg is about to witness the birth of his second child. So blessings on the mother and child. And because he can't record, because he has more important things to attend to, we've called in a DP to chat quickly about the U17 roster and a couple of other things. That roster came out Tuesday, and joining me by telephone to talk about it is Travis Clark, the director of content for Top Drawer Soccer and host of a podcast you're probably already well aware of that goes by the same name. Travis, how are you?
I'm doing well, Adam. Thanks for having me on. I should point out before we get in that Greg has no excuses not to be here, because I remember with the birth of my second child being in the middle of a podcast with my recording a podcast when my wife was thinking she was going into labor. So Greg, no excuses, sir.
All right. Tough love from Trav here.
just playing. But it's good luck to Greg and with all that, with the challenges of the second kid brings to everyone's life. So
yeah. 1 + 1 equals 2. You know what I mean?
Yes. I'm sure that's what people are here to listen to, though, of course.
So a couple things, let's get out of the way. First of all, the U20 roster, the provisional roster was due on Monday, right? Tab Ramos had to submit that to FIFA, but it's not public. We haven't mentioned that on this podcast, so I thought I'd just mention it. It's not public. It's not going to be public as far as we know. We'll have to wait till somebody leaks it to Travis and then...
Yeah. And then I don't share with anybody publicly either because I get threatened to. But it is worth noting that Chris Durkin did confirm that he would make the 50-man roster. So I interviewed him last week for a piece on our website, thought I'd plug it, and yeah. I tried to get him to basically come out and say, hey, are you going to the World Cup or not? But everything Chris talked about indicated that he would be part of the World Cup roster in and of itself, with the way he explained, you know, the way DC was trying to approach it, the way he was approaching it, and you know, approaching the camps that he's been in. So I think that's one name you could probably pencil in as going to Poland, barring an injury to him or one of the DC United defensive midfielders.
Right. So Ben Olsen could always pull the rug out from under Tab on that one if somebody goes down. We'll just have to wait a month to find out who all is on that roster.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about the roster, not to go into too much detail, it's pretty safe to guess who the main players will be, right? You know, your Alex Mendes is Uli Yanez with his like Wolfsburg announcement, basically saying, oh, hey, I'm going to the World Cup too. Like, yeah. So I feel like there's like 3 to 4 spots we're talking about at most, right?
Well, yeah, I think, yeah. And you guys did a good discussion of it a couple weeks ago, I think. You and
Taylor,
right? So I'd recommend people listen to that. And I thought you definitely soft pedaled how good Richie Ledesma is, but you know, I won't criticize you too much for that.
That's okay. I'm just trying to I go between trying to manage expectations, and then I feel like I'm too negative, and which I'm often accused of, surprisingly. But also, you know, you get burned by prospects too, right? I've been doing this for a little bit, and you see a lot of players you get excited about, and then they don't quite meet what expectations you have, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah. It's so hard to predict. I'm realizing that too, even though I'm a lot newer to this game than you are. And then the other thing we want to get out of the way right at the top is Generation Adidas Cup. That starts on April 13th, and you're going to be going to it, right?
Yes. So I will be covering the opening weekend, which is not this weekend, but the next weekend, I believe, is the April 13th is when it kicks off, and it lasts a week in Dallas. And basically what it is, for the uninitiated, MLS has invited several youth teams from around the world, really. Like, we posted the release on the website. You can find it online. But they splintered the MLS sides into two groups, Champion, Premier. Basically, are trying to get, you know, I believe Brian Kaliban was on your site talking, or podcast, excuse me, talking about the lack of intensity in some of the youth games. So this is sort of one way that MLS tries to ameliorate that by bringing these foreign teams, because they used to do just MLS versus MLS competitions every year. I covered one back when Paul Areola was at the Galaxy Academy still, and I think it was like 2011 or 2012, and it was just only MLS teams were there. And this is like a last 3 to 4 years, they've brought in foreign clubs, and foreign clubs always win it, the upper tier division of it. So that'll be interesting to see if an MLS team can, you know, right the ship, whether it's FC Dallas, you have prospects we're about to talk about that will be involved, that should be involved in there. The Sounders group, if they bring their big guns, I feel like should be able to make a run. And then the Galaxy will be in it as well. But again, you never know who's going to make that trip. A lot of guys stay with USL teams or don't end up going even though they're eligible. So that piece of the puzzle, you kind of got to wait to see who makes a trip like the week of the tournament.
Yeah. And we're going to see LA Galaxy are going to be in that champions group too, right? So Clavin will get a chance to strut his stuff there.
Yeah. So,
and it's the, just to be clear, it's the U17 level, right? U17s, and then there's a U15.
Yeah. So 2002, that's worth mentioning. Yeah. So I won't be there for it, but the Tuesday of the competition, they have brought in a U15 competition, which is basically MLS versus Liga MX sides. I think if you are trying to get into that, check out the LAFC team. I haven't seen much of them, but I've heard good things, and they should be stiff competition for the Liga MX sides they face.
Right. Well, so a lot to look for from that, and we'll be looking for what you write from the tournament, Travis. Let's move on to the meat and potatoes of this podcast. The U17s under new coach Rafael Wicki, a Swiss guy, are meeting this weekend for their last camp before World Cup qualifying in May. And so we get our first look at his selections. Before we jump into discussing them, I'm just going to read off the names real quick. Horrible broadcast strategy, but I think it's important to sort of lay it out there. The goalkeepers are Aaron Cervantes, Brian Dowd, Damian Las, and Chituru Odunze from the Vancouver Whitecaps. Las is like the clear number one goalkeeper for this group. Defenders are Axel Alejandre, Adam R. Moore, Mauricio Cuevas from the LA Galaxy, Tavon Gray from NYCFC, Kobe Hernandez also from the Galaxy, Antino Lopez from Shattuck St. Mary's, which is up here in Minnesota, Joe Scally from NYCFC, and John Tolkien from New York Red Bulls. Midfielders are Gilbert Fuentes, Brian Kango, Daniel Leyva, Adam Saldana, Peter Stroud, and the forwards, it's a long list, are Sahir David Arce, Jack DeVries, Cameron Dunbar, Andres Jasson, Alfonso Ocampo Chavez, Ricardo Pepe, Joshua Pinedath, Giovanni Reyna, and Griffin Yao. So anything stick out to you here from this list?
Nothing substantially. There's no shocks. Obviously, you can throw players that people are a bit more familiar with who aren't there. That's probably the best place to start, but that's because of whether injuries or club duties. Gianluca Abbuccio with Sporting KC, and then George Bello with Atlanta United. But Bello's been injured, and really, aside from I don't think he's played for either Atlanta or Atlanta United 2 all that much. He had the CONCACAF Champions League experience under his belt, and then I think he made an ATL UTD 2 appearance. I don't know why I abbreviated that, but he made a Atlanta United 2 appearance in the USL Championship. But
he did. Yeah.
I don't think he even played the full 90, and we haven't. And I've been following the I can't remember his name, Doug Robertson, or sorry, I've got his name wrong. Yeah, but I feel Robertson. Like his injury report updates have reported Bello as being week to week, but I can't remember what the specific injury was. Or so. In a sense, I think it's safe to kind of write both Bello and Busio off. You could go down the Efra Alvarez route, but obviously he accepted a call up to the Mexican national team. And then I think Mason Judge, who just played, I think, his first game for the Eintracht Frankfurt under-19s, isn't there. So I think
he's
that,
a center back.
Yes, which is a much needed position for this group, which is nothing surprising over the last couple of cycles, to be honest. Or anyway, I feel like every cycle is almost who's going to play center back in this group. But those are some of the bigger names to me. I know that you probably have a few other guys that you'd want to point out, but off the bat,
those omissions are sort of understandable, because the idea is that Judge is really making progress with Frankfurt, and Busio is obviously a key part of the Sporting Kansas City first team. And then Bello, like you mentioned, has the injury problems. I think some omissions that aren't as easily explained, but, you know, they might be explained from a sporting perspective, are Josh Atencio, who plays holding midfielder for Seattle. He's Danny Leiva's teammate. And Cade Cowell, who's a winger for San Jose, winger slash striker. He scored a goal in a friendly against the Monterey first team. It was it was a pretty nice goal, maybe 10 days ago. And then since we're on the omissions tip, let's just keep going. Dante Sealy and David Rodriguez from FC Dallas are both both going to get significant action with North Texas SC alongside call-up Ricardo Pepi. There's a player that I don't know as well as you do who I know a lot of people rate, Jonathan Perez from the Galaxy. He's an 03, I believe, but kind of a playmaker slash winger.
Yeah, he can fall into that hybrid of guys that could play potentially number 10 and out wide. I think he's somebody to keep an eye on. Jonathan Perez at the Galaxy should be with the team at the Generation Adidas Cup. And, you know, I don't know him that well. My colleague J.R. Eskelson just said he was really good. He went to the GA Cup regional matches in February, but he didn't really think that he would end up getting a nod. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty with how the U.S. could line up with the two wide forwards that makes you really wonder why not cast a wider net. But at the same time, they have plenty of candidates on this roster too. So I'd be really curious to know how Wiki put this roster together. He probably just made some phone calls and talked to the powers that be, maybe guys that worked with this group in the past to, you know, put this roster together. So I'm interested to see what we end up seeing.
Yeah, he said in the announcement of the roster that he's been watching a lot of video, which seems like it shouldn't be that surprising, I guess.
Let's hope so. Yeah, it's a full time job. So
a few more omissions probably worthy of mention. Patrick Bohui is a winger for Philadelphia, and he does have a USL debut under his belt. Didn't do anything amazing, but didn't look out of place either. Diego Lopez is a striker for Atlanta United's academy, who was a fixture on this U17 roster, you know, 15 months ago, played in the Nike friendlies in 2017, but hasn't gotten a sniff lately. He's kind of a big, lanky guy, similar frame to Pepi.
He's probably been, you know, kind of hurt by Pepe's emergence, who is clearly ahead of him. So it's almost like, why bring two of the same kind of forwards? It's interesting to note with this group too that before they sort of earlier in 2017 when they played the U15 CONCACAF Championship, they were doing all kinds of things with the center forward spot, where including Reyna and Gianluca Busio playing as kind of false nines. So I think Pepe's emergence has probably cemented, barring a huge shock, cemented himself as the top option there, and kind of made it a moot point, even though I guess you'd want to bring in similar types potentially. But that's kind of my take on it. I watched him play under 19 game with Atlanta United, and he looked okay. He had some nice moments, nice flicks, but it's also hard to like make sure when you're watching those games, is that still him? Am I tracking the right player? But yeah, he has had some injury issues as well that have limited his time on the field.
Yeah, he's been off and on for the last 12 months because of various injuries. So I still rate him, and I don't put him, you know, out of the pool so much. Five more names. Danny Robles, another Seattle central midfielder, is not in this roster, even though he was in the Nike friendlies roster. He struggled in his appearances in December for this side. So it's not a huge surprise that he's not back with the squad, but don't give up on him. He's still in the mix. And then Moses Nyman, he's one of the most talented players in the DA, right? At DC United, your neck of the woods. He just just got back to health in recent months after a long injury layoff. I know he's gone 93 games straight for the U17s in DC, but probably a little soon to pull him back in.
Just a quick note on him. I think that physicality, as silly as it is to make soccer, you know, about the physical aspect, it does come into play even at this age group. And that's one thing that Nyman needs to prove at the club level. He's obviously clearly talented. I think he's a 2003 off the top of my head, but I'm not 100% sure. And I think that I wouldn't say there's like ample depth in central midfield, but there's enough that it's not a huge concern. And we can jump into him later, but Brian Keogh, what I've seen from him, I've liked. So I think that also kind of helps them make that decision as well.
Okay. Let's talk about that midfield in just a second. The other three names are Sebastian Falzone, also at DC United. My understanding is he was on this roster at center back, but he suffered a torn ACL over the weekend. So that's
breaking news from Scuffed Podcast.
A real bummer for him, and you know, for the depth of the center back pool at this age group. Mm-hmm. And then Jack Imparato at Villarreal is, you know, a guy a lot of people are tracking abroad. I think he's a central midfielder, right? Or maybe a winger.
Yeah, he's in that hybrid wing 10 type where you're not quite sure where you're going to fit him, but he could definitely do a job at both. I haven't seen him. I've seen his goals. He sent some to me and I cut them and put them into a story, but I haven't seen a full game from him. So it's hard to know what to make of him. He's a small technical guy that the last time I saw him, he was about 5'2". Playing for De Anza Force and holding his own against older competition. It's worth noting he's a very talented player, but I think he could also be pigeonholed into the – we have a lot of these maybe 10, maybe wide forward types, and he's maybe just not standing out enough to the new coach to get included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and then the last one is Tyler Freeman. He's a big striker at Sporting Kansas City. I assume he'll get some looks with the Swope Park Rangers this year. Maybe he already has.
Yeah, he's got a couple appearances. I think starts hasn't. I think he hasn't moved the needle enough. He hasn't scored or really set any chances, created many chances. But I think he's, from what I understand, he's pretty versatile too. Can play any of not the winger midfielder type, but more like he could probably be a 9, 7, or 11 if you're going by, you know, a 3-4 system. So I'll be curious to see how it works out for him at club level for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now that we've talked about everybody who's not there. The one that sticks out to me really the most in this roster is Daniel Leyva. He's played, I think he's started 4 games for the Tacoma Defiance at central midfield. He's definitely the biggest prospect of all the many teenagers in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense, I would like to hear what you think of this. My sense of the performances at the Nike friendlies is that this team could not build out of the back in any sort of cohesive way. They have talent. They had talent up front. Pepe played pretty well at the Nike friendlies.
Mm-hmm.
Reyna, you know, did a lot of impressive dribbling, and you know, Busio scored a goal. Busio did not play well in his one appearance, but Busio scored a goal. Griffin Yao was active and buzzy, but there was just no cohesive buildup, and I think it was a midfield problem. The coach at the time,
was it Dave Vanderberg or Sean Sekiris?
It was Sekiris.
Sekiris. It was one of those two.
Yeah, Sekiris couldn't figure out how to organize that midfield in a way that we could get a hold of the game. Granted, we were playing pretty good competition. Granted, the squad was not all that used to each other, which I think is probably a problem. Going to be a problem throughout the cycle. But my sense is Leyva is. Who got his first call up for this camp is kind of a potential solution for that because he's such a good, smart distributor from deep for that Tacoma USL side. He's doing it. He did it against a really good Sacramento Republic side on Monday. I thought, especially in the first half, he was one of the better players on the field. And I'm excited to see. I mean, I know that we're going to be able to see any footage from this camp, but in as much as it's a signal that Leyva will be on the qualifying squad, I'm excited to see how he pans out in that role.
Yeah, I definitely think he fits that void, and he could even give the option of, if we're talking hypothetical lineups, again, I know I'm kind of trumping what you had planned, but you know, you put Leyva and then maybe you put in two like box-to-box marauders and almost Berhalter-y where there are 8/10 hybrids and they can, even though, you know, that would bring in, you know, Tavon Gray potentially in the mix like he did at the Nike friendlies. I think Brian Kao could fulfill one of those roles as well. Or then maybe you go more 6-8-10 traditional with like a Gilbert Fuentes or Gio Reyna in the midfield. I'm curious what they do with Reyna. I'm curious if he's sharp. I have no idea. You know, my best indicators of where he is via his social media. And the last I saw was a few weeks ago, he was at a Brooklyn Nets basketball game. So my hope is that he's just sharp and fit enough to be an impactful player in CONCACAF, because if he's on song, I feel like this team will be fine offensively, provided, you know, like you said, they can get the ball to him in dangerous spots. So that's obviously important as well.
Yeah. I mean, my take on on Reyna is, you know, at the Nike friendlies, he was impressive. You know, he's dynamic on the ball, and he's kind of a man among boys at this level. He's like 6 feet tall. He just shrugs people off. He dribbles around people. But it seemed like in that tournament, and maybe it was a function of the lack of cohesion squad wide. Maybe it was, you know, somewhat an indictment of Reyna's passing vision. He did not get other people involved. He did not build rhythm. It's like he almost dribbled to all the way to a dead end and then looked for a pass. And so I'd like to see, for that reason, I'd like to see him on the wing where he can just, you know, he can just sort of be this side's Pulisic and pin his ears back and go at people and create without having the burden of orchestrating a lot, you know?
Yeah, I do think that it's worth mentioning too, this is the first cycle since, you know, in 20 years, basically since U17 sides existed, that the U.S. hasn't had the residency program. So there's no day in, day out cohesion for the group. You have a new coach that you're throwing on top of it that his hire definitely impresses me. But at the same time, you have to worry about just how it's all going to look and come together, because he, you know, this is from April 4th through 8th. And you're cobbling together a good amount of players that know each other, but you know, I'm not sure how early they'll be able to bring in players for qualifying. You'd assume that Mason Judge is probably guaranteed a spot on the team and that they had some kind of agreement with Eintracht to leave him there and then they'll bring him in. I mean, they need a center back, so any center back that's halfway decent with a pulse at this point, right? So
yeah.
I think that while we shouldn't get too hung up on results, there's also, this group isn't, in my opinion, and I think maybe you disagree, I could be putting words in your mouth, that this isn't quite at the level of the 2017 group, but at the same time, you have a lot of players here that are ahead of where some of their peers were during the last cycle.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that or not. I mean, they certainly didn't look that great in the Nike friendlies, but I don't know if that was a lack of quality or some of this other stuff we're talking about, cohesion and sort of overall strategy and a midfield that didn't quite work. And that's why I'm so, you know, obviously why I'm so excited about Leyva, seeing how he works with this group.
Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out Aaron Cervantes too. I know we have the close observers of the U17 team will assume Loss as a starter, but I think Cervantes is getting experience. He played a USL match a couple of weeks ago, didn't look out of place, and I think he'll push Loss for a spot, and that's what's needed. I'm not a huge Chituru Ndunze fan. He just looks, I mean, he's 6'7", which is
he's massive. Huge.
Massive. It's so big for a 16, 17 year old, but he makes his decision making can be shaky at times, and then he looks a little bit uncomfortable out there. So I'm curious about that, as nerdy as it is for me to say, I'm curious about who the U17 goalkeeper will be. But you know, Loss is a high end prospect for this group no matter what shakes out, and I would still expect him to start. Mm-hmm. And then I'm gonna get on my Joshua Pinedeth. I almost said his name wrong. I think he'll be interesting to see because he's a little bit of a different player from what I'm used to seeing in the U.S. player pool. You know, he tries stuff in similar to Clint Dempsey, but also has the, as you kind of noted with the Reyna tendency, like he can dribble into a black hole as well. Like if you have Reyna and Pinedeth on opposite wings, that doesn't spell great things for your offense potentially. So I'm curious to see if he can get through this and like stake his claim on a roster spot in front of Wiki.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing Pinedeth too. You know, I mean, he has some great highlight reels. He has gotten, significant minutes for the Ajax U17 side, which is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that team is stacked with,
I think it's like potential. 7 or 8 of the Holland U17s played, like that started in their most recent friendly or from Ajax Academy. So just to give an idea, like I talk about this on our show, like I can't find out where I'm landing if I'm going too heavy on the, that's a pretty serious environment he's in. The culture is nothing compared to, like, it's substantially more compared to what some MLS academies have to offer. But then we've seen plenty of times where, you know, American at big club equals lots of buzz. Am I going too far on that? So I'm really curious to see if he, you know, what, you know, how he
stacks
up.
That is the question. That is the question.
Against like a Griffin Yao, you know, who he's industrious. He works hard. Like, he's one of the hardest working U17 players I've ever seen. In the past, you know, what, few years, whatever you want to label it. But does he have enough end product to really make an impact? And I think at CONCACAF, that'll be fine. Like he could be someone that keeps Pinedeth on the bench as a super sub. But You know, on the flip side, it's worth watching as this group comes together from attacking perspective.
Yeah, and I would put Jassen in kind of the same category as Yao, sort of a hard worker who's not, not going to pop off the television screen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Jack DeVries as well.
He did get some minutes with Bethlehem Steel in either their first or second game against North Carolina, and he actually came off for Patrick Bowie. That's why I'm glad I didn't mention all those names that you did. But
Bowie sounds right.
He didn't set the world alight, but I think he's, again, you know, he's going to be looking to fill one of those attacking roles, and if he can influence the game enough that he could play his way into the roster. Depending, a lot of this depends on how Wiki is going to play. What, you know, is this like a Tab Ramos mandated like style? Is it like, I'm very curious about all the discussions going on in the background. And this is why they're all in Chicago, right? So, you know, maybe we see something that looks very similar to Tab. Actually, I asked Durkin about this. I'm going to bring it up about how the differences between the 17s and the 20s, and he's talking about how Tab wants them to press more. I know I'm getting pretty detailed and nerdy.
No, this
here,
is good.
But it's, you know, I'm curious. Will the 17s be even more Tab Ramos-esque with pressing? Will it be very hack-centric where they, you know, press, get the ball out wide, and get in the strikers? Will it be building up to the middle? Like, there's lots of questions that we won't get answered until they play Canada on May 2nd.
My guess is they'll be more Berhalter-esque than Tab-esque.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the word we got when they announced Wiki's hiring, that he had, mm-hmm. you know, he had had long conversations with Berhalter. So whether Joe Scally tucks in as an inverted fullback, I think that may be a bridge too far. But
the 6'5" Joe Scally, it seems like he's humongous.
He's a tall young man.
Yeah.
And then, you know, before we give our starting 11s, I want to mention a couple guys who struggled a little bit. I thought Mason Judge, who's not in this roster, obviously, I thought he really struggled in the Nike friendlies. He's a good athlete, but I don't know. It seemed a bit mistake prone, and that really hurt us in that competition. I also thought Adam Armour, who played most of the minutes at left back, struggled a little bit. Could have gotten a red card against Portugal. Probably should have if it wasn't meaningless U-17 competition. And his ability to possess the ball and move it forward in a meaningful way seemed a bit lacking, especially in comparison to Kobe Hernandez, who is a natural left back.
I really wish he could play left back too, but
yeah. So does Kerry Kleiben. Yeah,
or get Bello into the group, and I don't know. Anyway, that's going down another wormhole. I'm curious if John Tolkien, who isn't quite, I haven't seen him as much and don't know his game super well, but you know, from what I gather, he's probably a little more stay-at-homey. He's not like a stay-at-homey, stay-at-home left back. He's not going to get forward as much. I wonder if Tavon Gray.
I don't know if that's true, Travis. He scored 2 goals over the weekend in the academy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that clearly says he does get forward. But I guess in the same way that Armour showed that he could, even if he was lacking with the ball. But anyway, that'll be the battle that we won't see playing out in Lakewood Ranch this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to see Tolkien. Tolkien. He's not the guy who wrote The Lord of the Rings. And then a guy who made a kind of a nice couple of cameos at the Nike friendlies was Cam Dunbar at the LA Galaxy. He still looks pretty raw as a winger, but mm-hmm. you know, he's learning under one of the, you know, best attacking coaches in the DA, Brian Kleiben, and I expect him to get better and better as the days and the weeks and the months go along. So it'd be interesting to see if he, you know, can make an impact.
I think he could, at least before, he could definitely impact the game as a super sub for sure. And mm-hmm. somebody that if he's not in the starting mix, he could make the roster and bring you in, someone that can stretch the field if you're leading and you can hit on the counter, or somebody that can open up space for your attackers to come in underneath. It'll be interesting to see if he can get himself into the mix.
Yeah, and another winger, you know, another winger we should talk about quickly, winger/striker, is Afonso Ocampo Chavez. Now, a lot of people rate him very highly, including the U.S. youth national team authorities, because he seems like he gets called up for every single camp.
Mm-hmm.
Thing about him is, in contrast to Leyva, AOC hasn't has not looked good in at the USL level. He's not looked up to the physicality of it, and now part of that is he doesn't get a ton of service when it's a, you know, when it's nine academy kids and two 21-year-olds playing like a pretty good USL side by USL standards. So that's so that's an issue that mitigates some of the criticism, but he's not looked good at USL level. He didn't look good at the Nike friendlies either, and I think, at least to my eyes, Pepe played his way right past AOC in the depth chart in those games.
Yeah, so no, I think that's certainly something you can't. They must like him. They must think he brings. They see him in training, and I think that you can't necessarily. Obviously, you can make a lot. You can base a lot. If he was tearing up the USL, it'd be different. But at the same time, I think he's still coming along. He's still young, and as you noted, the Defiance. Their approach is, I like it and it's interesting, but at the same time, you wonder how, you'll be curious how, I'll be curious to see how it all plays out with some of these guys that they've aggressively signed at 15 and 16 years old and then kind of thrown them to the wolves a little bit. So he's somebody I would be surprised if Alfonso Ocampo-Chavez, I think he's a good goal scorer, but it's, I think part of it is also too, Pepe's just kind of lapped him and it doesn't hurt the cause when he scores a hat trick, even as atrocious as the defense was for each goal, that Pepe scores a hat trick in his opening USL League One match too, to boot.
Yeah, that's obviously impressive, and it catches everybody's eye. I wasn't like you; I wasn't all that impressed by any of the goals. Maybe the first one where he sort of swam by the center back on a bouncing ball and got to it first showed a little bit of grit.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I like about him is he's a good passer. He's a really good passer.
And he has some really, really nice touch, like one touch connecting play. He found Brian Reynolds, who I thought did okay. Speaking of former U.S. Youth Internationals at right back, which where he's kind of converting to continuing from last season. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that Pepe is the first name on the team sheet at the forward position, no doubt.
Okay.
But of course, Ralph Wicke could prove us wrong.
Yes, Ralph, prove us wrong. All right, let's give our starting 11s and then get out of here. We both got stuff to do. starting from the back, who's your goalkeeper?
I got to go Laos. I almost said Laos, which is country, not a person. But Damien Laos, for me, I can't.
It's also it's also a small insect.
Yeah, so the way I see it is Cervantes looks like to me, and this is based off one USL match, so I'm very reactionary. I'm just kind of glad to see him in the mix, think that it'll be good to have somebody push Laos and make sure he's not just kind of resting on his laurels, but I can't see them going in another direction.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm with you. Damien Laos, he may be the best prospect on this whole age group. Now that could prove out to be just a bunch of hype and it could mean nothing, but right now he looks real good. Left back.
That's a tough one. Can we say Kobe Hernandez? No, I wish I could put Hernandez in. I'm from this group. Armour seems to have the edge as a leader. I don't necessarily think Tolkien will emerge. And there's a lot that I didn't like about his game at the friendlies, but I still think he'll bring enough to win out. If we're looking at this group, I guess you could hope for Bello coming in or another center back to be found and Kobe comes out left, but I'll stick with Armour. I'm just calling him Adam Armour, but I could be wrong on there too.
Yeah. Armour.
Yeah. That's what you were saying.
He certainly looks the part physically and he's not he's not a bad soccer player by any stretch. I'm not saying that. But I saw enough that I want to see a change there. So give me John Tolkien, just out of curiosity. Center back, who you got?
I think Alejandre and Kobe Hernandez, which we saw that starting duo together at the Nike friendlies for at least one game. I'm totally pulling that out of thin air. I do think
I agree.
It's worth mentioning Tavon Gray here. The positional listing on U.S. soccer releases aren't always obviously ironclad, but Gray's gotten some run in not recently, but he's played as a center back. So I'd be curious to see if that's maybe a potential contender, like a Gray Alejandre or Gray Judge or Alejandre Judge, and then Kobe Hernandez can move to left back. But I'll stick with Alejandre and Kobe Hernandez for now.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go with the same, and I'll just mention that I agree with the people who say that Coby Hernandez should be a left back. I think he will be a left back. I don't think there's any question about it. He's not tall enough to be a center back, and he's got a sweet left foot. He's really good at combining up the flank. I mean, he's one of the most high IQ players in the entire youth national team pool, based on what I've seen. I really like his game. But the fact
if anything, it'll be good for him, though, even if he's out of position, because it'll teach him to defend and be put in positions where he has to solve problems. And then if he can translate that to a left back spot, it's all the better for his development, I would say.
Yeah, I don't see any harm being done to him here. And, you know, if he ends up playing left back, all the better. I think that transforms our left side into something much more formidable. But right now we need center backs. We don't have Judge was really shaky at the Nike friendlies. Alejandre hasn't really been able to nail anything down. Falzone is injured now, and I don't think he got many minutes at all in the Nike friendlies. And I forget who the other center back is.
He was a Dina. He did not play at the Nike friendlies. Okay, I think.
Okay, so, and yeah. Then Antino Lopez, who I don't believe was at the Nike friendlies either, or if he was, he didn't play much. So it's a thin group, and Coby is more than adequate at the job, and I think he's just gonna have to take one for the team, at least in qualifying.
Yes, I think that's what we'll see, especially in qualifying. Other options could emerge at the World Cup, but again, we shouldn't get too far ahead of ourselves for this episode.
One possibility is if Mauricio Cuevas, who is I think going to be backing up Joe Scally at right back. Scally's mm-hmm. my starting right back, just for the record. But
same here.
If Cuevas,
get that out of the way.
Right, let's get it out of the way. Cuevas, if he comes through and really shows well in this camp, there's a possibility that Scally could make this long anticipated move to center back, in at least in this group. I mean, he's got the height for it, as you mentioned previously. That changes the dynamic in a way, in a similar way to having Tavon Gray play center back would, you know?
Yeah,
makes it a little easier to move Coby out left.
It's worth pointing out that you can get away with playing sort of undersized guys that are definitely aren't center backs at this level. We saw that last time when you had James Sands and Chris Durkin starting there, and neither look like they're going to be professional center backs. So somebody dug back through the previous cycles, and it's rare that you get out and out center backs. You know, there's a long list of 2000s that weren't on that group that have emerged, just to kind of give people a comparison. You know, Chris Richards was a 2000. He's going to be on the under 20 World Cup team, and he plays at Bayern Munich now. He was not in that group. Abubakar Keita with Croatia, he's a guy that is a 2000, could have been in that World Cup, didn't end up playing. So it's not the be all end all. It's just finding the guys that can get the job done, you know, for the purposes of the cycle, I guess.
Yeah, which is exactly how I'm thinking about it. You know, I'm not trying to project who's going to be a national team starter in 3 right. years or anything. That's such a fool's errand that it's almost like the appropriate way to look at this is like, who's the best for this team to be the best this team can be right now. And okay, I'm off that soapbox. Let's see. So we got Scally out, right?
Yep.
Most likely. And then in the midfield, how do you want to set up your midfield, and who do you want to be there?
So am I guessing what Ralph is going to do, or am I doing what I want to do?
Do what you want to do.
So I think I would go with Leyva at the six, and then I would go with Brian Keo as one of my box. I would kind of do like the 8-10 that we see from Berhalter, do Keo and Gray. I know we talked about Gray as a defender, but Keo and Gray could really wreck stuff, press high, blow things up, and then create chance. That way you're not worrying about when you need to build up the midfield, you have Leyva there. He can sit back a little bit, but you have two players that can kind of blow stuff up high up the field and, you know, turn possession into counterattacks really quickly.
Okay. That's an interesting way to do it. I don't know, you know, what Wiki's going to do. And like we talked about, I think he's probably more going to be Berhalter-esque than Ramos-esque, but that being said, I'd like to see a double pivot of Leyva and Gray, and Stroud would be okay with me too. But I think, you know, mm-hmm. Leva's not the most mobile. He's not super fast, but he is pretty tough in the tackle. And like I said earlier, his distribution, I think, is excellent, especially for a 15-year-old at the USL level to do what he's doing at that age is pretty remarkable and probably not getting nearly enough attention from the broader fan base.
You're certainly giving him plenty of attention, though. So
I'm only one man. And then Gray is, you know, Gray covers a ton of ground. He has none of the mobility issues that Leyva has. And he's, I thought he was our best player in that game against Brazil in the Nike friendlies. He seemed to grow more comfortable on the ball, and he could maybe push forward a little bit more and Leyva stay more at home. But I kind of like the idea of a double pivot. And then Gilbert Fuentes as the 10, as a clear number 10, sort of supporting the wingers and connecting with Leyva and Gray and the wings and Pepe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one way. That's kind of my other alternative. I was just trying to make sure we didn't pick the same exact 11, to be honest.
Thanks.
But no, but I like the idea.
Your idea too.
Yeah, exactly. Like when it comes to youth international stuff, we're talking about CONCACAF as well. Like, you know, you want to have a team that can build from the back and possess the ball, but at the same time, you want to have different looks you can throw at teams. You can create situations where 16-year-olds are uncomfortable, and you know the U.S. is going to be at home. So you do that, you sit high, play a high line, and you can really kind of blow stuff up with those two, I think, out there. I saw KO play with the D.C. United during preseason, and I think he's a guy that people will get to know pretty soon here in the next month or so. Of course, I say that he'll end up off the roster. So
no, don't say that. It's a good good shout. I've not seen KO play, so I'm glad to hear that, and I'll keep my eye out. So
are we doing the nine first, or just all three forwards at once? What's the best scuffed way of doing things here?
Generally, all right. Let me consult our operating procedure manual.
What's the podcast style guide you're running with, Adam?
We always go wingers first, and then finish off with the nine. So wingers.
Okay, so what I would do is Pinedath and Reyna on the wings. I know I said that both can be over dribbly and create problems if they're not connecting play, but I would love to throw those two guys out. I have my midfielders blowing things up, winning the ball high, and then Pinedath can do 10 step overs, beat his man, cross it to Reyna on the other flank, and he'll head it back to Pepe for the goal.
Kapow. Yeah, I like that, because you can afford to put sort of two Cadillac guys on the wings when,
I'm liking my team more and more as we're doing this.
Pinedath's more of a Mazda Miata than a Cadillac, to be honest. He's like 105 pounds, but.
Yeah, he definitely has, I think, issues with just fitness and literal growing pains is part of the reason why he's not in the lineup a little bit more for Ajax. But I'm very curious to see if he fits in with the group and can actually do what I project onto him.
Yeah, my wingers are actually the same. Reyna on the right, Pinedath on the left. Just because I'm curious about Pinedath, I think, you know, Reyna has to be in the starting 11, so I'm putting him on the wing because I think it's probably going to be his best position.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he'd have some good synergy with Joe Scally, who likes to overlap up the right wing.
Yeah.
And then I think Fuentes, you know, a lot of this depends on Fuentes really playing well. And I think he was hit and miss in that friendly with Monterrey where Cade Cowell scored. But he shows flashes of just excellent work in tight space. And, you know, he makes quick decisions. He passes the ball well. So if he can be on his game, and then we got Pinedath and Reyna on the wings, I think we have a pretty dangerous attack, considering we have, you know, the greatest striker in the history of American soccer at the night.
Right, the next Josh Sargent, is that what we can call him, or is that too soon?
I was going to say, he did, you know, he scored the hat trick, and he's a good passer, but you saw that clip of him doing that him dragging the ball. His first touch was a drag in the box that just absolutely annihilated the guy marking him.
I don't know if I saw that. I don't necessarily remember it, but
it was a preseason goal. It was a goal he scored against.
Methodist. SMU. Yes. And I think the first goal he scored, like, he basically hit it and the goalkeeper just like let the ball through his hands and through his legs. And I was like, man, that's college soccer for you. But
yeah, that was
the second goal was like amazing. Yeah. That I thought you were talking about the USL League One game. This was, yeah. So yeah, that goal was pretty eye popping stuff for a just turned 16-year-old kid. I do think we mentioned just about every player on the roster. One guy who I don't know a ton about, has plenty to prove. Sajir David Arce of Morelia. Mm-hmm. He is the other non-US or Canada-based player aside from Pinedath. I think I grabbed a clip that I shared on Twitter, so check that out at Travis M. Clark if you're listening and want a little more. I don't speak Spanish, so I couldn't tell you what was said, but there are a few highlights of his goals, and I'm curious to see if he's like a if he's in that 10 wing hybrid, or is he like a front can play anywhere across the front three hybrid type attacking player?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's I'm glad you mentioned it because he's one of the leading scorers in at the U17 level in all of the Liga MX Academy.
U17s, yeah. I think, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So you know he could well come in and beat out Pinedath, or you know, even if Wiki really wants to shake it up, he could Arce could be so good that he wants to go with like a two striker set or something. I don't know, but I would not be sad to see Arce in the starting 11 at mm-hmm. all.
I do think Griffin Yao will end up being kind of the other side if because of his, you know, his work rate, his defensive, if they're pressing a lot, pressing high, then he's a guy that I feel like if he unlocks more end product, he could be a pretty high ceiling player. If I'm putting money on it, wouldn't bet on him becoming a full national team player at this point. But like I said before on this show, his work rate is like eye popping. I watched him play with Loudon. Yes, his goal was super lucky and deflected, but you know, they've been playing him at the 10 a little bit. I think that he could end up maybe being sort of a left back one day, but his progression I'm following pretty closely, partially because it's geographic and then partially because, like I've said, he's kind of like astounding how much the kid runs at his age.
Yeah, can't underestimate that.
No, yeah.
So we agree, though, that Pepe's the number 9, right?
Yeah, I think there's little debate there. And, you know, it's obviously recency bias, but at the same time, everything we've been able to see from him, both on and off the ball, both with the national team at the Nike friendlies, where he was sort of like would you label him the breakout star there because people knew less about him? But he like murdered DA competition. I think his tally was 19 goals in 8 games for the U17 FC Dallas team. Mm. And when you watch him, you're like, oh, of course. Like you can just like kick balls to his head and they will bounce off and he will score. Or like, but he's more of a player than that, right? He looks like this big lug, but he's like more of a complete player.
Yeah, that's what really stuck out to me at the Nike friendlies was his ability to hold the ball up and find passes, you know, and not just like, you know, knock the ball down and then play it directly back to somebody's feet, but which he can do, but you know, mm-hmm. Like a flicked pass or a, you know, sort of a clever pass through a crowded area to find somebody and spring them. I think that's what really caught my eye.
Yeah, and there's a couple of compilations from his game last week and definitely worth checking out if for some reason you're not familiar with what he's done, but it'll be curious to see just how good League One of the USL really is. But regardless, he's playing against grown men.
Doesn't really
he's
matter.
He's 16 years old. And I think that translates to CONCACAF at minimum. So I'm excited to see him lead the line for this team in May against Canada.
I'm excited to see him start for FC Dallas on the weekend. Just kidding. That's probably not going to happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a debut.
I would be surprised if he doesn't debut this season, just considering they've been trotting out Dominic Baggi there. I think at least off the bench, you're going to see him depending on like when the World Cup is and that's sort of a schedule and how he can impress Lucci in training.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we've covered it, Travis.
Everything you need to know about the U17 roster.
Yeah, thank you so much for helping us in our time of need. How can people find you? Everybody who listens to this podcast already knows who you are, so this is just a charade, but how can people find you?
So the website that I work for is Top Drawer Soccer. We do a podcast, The Top Drawer Soccer Show, which I do with the Total Soccer Show guys. It comes out every week, usually on a Thursday or Friday, life and schedule permitting. And if you're listening to this and you want a subscription account, I'm going to plug our subscription. I'll get you to use the promo code podcast, 20% off for all Scuffed listeners as well as Top Drawer Soccer Show listeners.
All right.
And at Travis M. Clark on Twitter, as I mentioned, thanks for having me on, Adam. I'm first longtime listener, first time guest, I think. I've had you on our podcast.
Yeah, I've been on yours. And I appreciated that. I appreciate you today, man. Have a good rest of your week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see ya.